From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today On Deadline is looking at the issue on just about everyone's mind heading into the polls this November: our wallets. No matter what poll you read, the news you consume, or the candidate you support, the economy is probably your focus this election season. After inflation rose to a four-decade high in 2022, prices have remained stubborn, refusing to fall as fast as they rose, and forcing Americans to spend their savings or put purchases on credit just to make ends meet. The Public Policy Institute of California highlights that since 2019, prices have increased by 23% on average. This August, Moody Analytics reported that inflation had caused the average American household to spend $709 more in July than they did just 2 years earlier on the very same goods and services. $709 is the difference in whether or not you can afford a car payment, insurance, groceries, or even mortgage or rent in a decent neighborhood. So, in the face of inflated prices and high interest rates, how have Americans been making ends meet? The answer is credit. To share more on this, Bankrate analyst Sarah Foster joined Odyssey.
Since the Fed began raising rates in March of 2022, nearly 2 in 5 Americans have maxed out a credit card, or at least come close. So 2 in 5 Americans, how does that compare to before, say, the Fed began raising interest rates? And what does that mean trying to get out of that?
Yeah, so we don't really have a look of what it looked like before the Fed started raising interest rates. But kind of what I can tell you is it's a pretty surprising stat, because when you look at the aggregate nationwide utilization rates, you know, the average credit card holder is utilizing about 21.3% of their credit, which is roughly in line with historic norms that were prevailing in the decade before the pandemic occurred. But I think what this Bankrate data suggests is that double-clicking on that stat, you know, looking at the distribution between how many Americans are at that top, end of the scale, you know, not utilizing very much versus the bottom end where they're utilizing a lot, you know, that gulf is widening, and certainly it's all to do with inflation, according to our survey.
And a lot of that on the credit card are just living expenses, groceries, utilities.
Yeah, so what we found is that 54% of the cardholders who've either maxed out a card or come close blame inflation, and it was far and above the most common reason. Even further, you know, ahead than emergency expenses were cited, you know, 38% of cardholders blamed that as a reason. You know, 32% also cited credit card debt. I think what's been really eye-opening is that looking at just credit card balances overall since inflation surged, and of course, at a time when interest rates on credit cards are the highest levels that we've ever seen in Bankrate data, is a lot of these lower-income Americans who were hit by inflation because they had limited room in their budgets to make room for it, they're the ones who have had to turn to a credit card to kind of eat those extra costs. And, just the sticky situation it's put them in when credit card debt is just so much more costly than it even was before.
It's so easy to get into a downward spiral in your personal finances this way, too.
The way I think about this a lot is, you know, if you were just say you had $5,000 on a credit card, you know, you had interest rate is about 21%. And according to our data on average, you know, if you were just making the minimum payment, it would take you 23 years to pay that balance off. And you spend over $8,000 in interest. So, you know, really a cycle of debt, a vicious cycle of debt. I think that's an apt way to describe it.
So, with the economy continuing to plague Americans and put their plans on hold, many are looking to place blame. While Democrats and Republicans like to point across the aisle and deflect the nation's issues onto their political rivals, economists have said that inflation isn't really former President Donald Trump or current President Joe Biden's fault. Over the summer, David Wessel, director of the Hutchins Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy at the Brookings Institution, a left-leaning think tank, shared with CNBC that global events beyond the control of the presidents were to blame. In general, presidents get more credit and blame for the economy than they deserve, he said. Still, Americans are looking for a solution to the problem. And voting in the upcoming election is one way to create change. But is this year any different from years past? Don't we always vote with our wallets? Mark Hamrick from Bankrate recently shared just how much the economy is playing into this election.
Well, with Election Day right around the corner, personal finances are always a top deal when it comes to determining who you're going to vote for. A lot of people say we just vote with our pocketbook, and we're joined by Mark Hamrick from Bankrate as they just, of course, asked some great questions to those that would participate in a poll 3 weeks now until the presidential elections. Mark, appreciate the time. Tell us a little bit about why you do this.
As you know, we really do try to stay in touch with Americans and how they're doing with their personal finances. And given the fact that the economy and personal finances loom large in our everyday lives and by extension in the election process, we wanted to see how Americans felt about the choices that they have going forward with the election, particularly with respect to presidential election.
So let's talk about the findings. What the top issues when it comes to the presidential election are, especially when talking about their finances?
So inflation is the number one issue for American adults in general, but where it breaks down is how Democrats and Republicans view it. So it's number one for 28% of Democrats, but for Republicans, it's 56%. So there is a divide here, as we see across the board with respect to our politics. And then when we go farther on down the list, what are the other issues that Americans might tend to say is number one with respect to the economy and the presidential election? Broadly, the second issue comes up, healthcare costs and affordable housing and then jobs.
You guys did ask which of the presidential candidates is best for Americans' personal financial situation and the economy and inflation. Let's talk about those results.
So broadly speaking, President Trump, former President Trump, fares better than Vice President Harris when it comes to the three questions we put to them for their personal financial situation, for the economy and inflation. Taken together, the average is a percentage of about 4%. So, for example, on the economy, former President Trump gets the support of 45% of those answering the question versus 40% of those for Vice President Harris. What's interesting, though, just to use that question as an example, 7% said neither and 8% said they don't know. So there's a difference of 5 points on that, and there's 15 points where people say neither or don't know. And so, as we know, we're getting closer to the election, and maybe it might be that some people are still making up their mind, and they may be the people who ultimately decide the election is the people are still in the process of figuring it out.
Well, what are some other thoughts from this, especially considering that, yes, while this is the biggest thing going on in the U.S. right now and what everybody's eyes are on, just because somebody is elected or not elected president doesn't necessarily mean that our finances will be impacted personally or we're beholden to it, taking control of our lives.
Well, I think that's a great point. First of all, I think that it tends to be the case that we attach more importance or more potential power to presidential candidates than they actually have with respect to their control over the economy. I would say right now, one of the chief entities that's exerting a great deal of control over the economy is the Federal Reserve, which is independent by law and is working to bring down inflation. And that process is slowly working, although prices remain elevated. Interesting from the survey that a majority of Americans say they believe the economy is on the wrong track. So that is Americans taken together. But when you ask with respect to political identification, 83% of Republicans say the economy is on the wrong track, but just 27% of Democrats. One of the key questions of this election will determine is the control not only of the White House, but of the Congress. If there is a party sweep on either side, then that gives that president the ability to essentially put policy initiatives through legislation that they want to get passed. If it is, however, the the case, which we've seen also often in United States history, particularly recently, where the government is divided, where, for example, one party controls the House, the other controls the Senate, and another party controls the White House, then it's going to be much more difficult to get policy initiatives through. That might be, in the view of many people, the best outcome. I'm not saying it is or isn't, but I think many people in the American public believe it is, because that sort of serves as a break on policy initiatives that one side or the other might regard as extreme.
From used cars to gas prices and rent, everything is more expensive these days. But one thing felt most by Americans is inflation's impact on our food. Both candidates, and both parties for that matter, say this is an issue that only they can fix. But who can we really look to, and how can we know that they're right? Odyssey's KNX Radio in Los Angeles recently dove into rising prices. It talked to Michigan State University food economist David Ortega.
Presidential candidates tend to talk about big issues like the economy, foreign policy, immigration, and taxes. But a sizzling topic on the presidential campaign trail this year has been bacon. Yes, bacon and bacon prices.
Even I'm cutting back on bacon. It's too expensive. I'm cutting back on it.
Vice President Harris blames price gouging.
Many of the big food companies are seeing their highest profits in two decades.
So what's really going on with bacon?
It's really been a convergence of factors, both on the supply and the demand side. You know, on the supply, if you go back to the COVID-19 pandemic, that's where we saw a lot of disruptions to the processing plants. We saw a lot of workers fall ill, and some of the plants had to either shut down temporarily or reduce their capacity. And so that led to, you know, a rise in the price of pork and bacon as a result, because there was relatively less supply available. Now, if you fast forward, we had Russia's invasion of Ukraine in early 2022. That led to sort of a surge in the price of grains and other commodities. You know, those prices came down quickly, but that translates into higher feed costs that producers have to incur.
That is Michigan State University food economist David Ortega. He says a new law here in California has impacted bacon prices too.
Proposition 12, the animal welfare law that, you know, mandates that producers have to meet new, animal welfare standards that increases the cost of to producers. But, you know, you also have factors on the demand side, and that is people have been spending a lot more on food prior to, you know, compared to what we were spending before the pandemic. Even when you adjust for inflation, and bacon is sort of your staple breakfast protein that a lot of Americans consume. And so there's been very strong demand for bacon. And so all of that together leads to, you know, these increases in price that we've seen. You know, compared to 4 years ago, the price of bacon is up about 23%.
He says food prices are a big deal for people, so it makes sense that the candidates would talk about them.
We feel these price increases on a weekly, if not more frequent basis when we go grocery shopping. And, you know, what consumers are reacting to here is the cumulative effects of inflation. And this is something that, you know, I would say when you look at the inflation that we've experienced over the past 4 years, I think the supermarket has really emerged as, you know, the face of inflation, given, you know, the rise in food prices that we've seen and how frequently we go grocery shopping. We see these food prices and price increases on a weekly, if not more frequent basis.
So, whose policies will really put our checking accounts back into the green? Well, that depends on who you are and which expert you ask. Both Moody's and Goldman Sachs got a look at Donald Trump's policy playbook and Kamala Harris's. This is what they predicted. Moody's said the economy would grow an average of 1.3% annually during Trump's 4-year term versus 2.1% under Harris. Inflation would rise from 3% this year to 3.5% in 2025 if we elect Trump, compared to just 2.4% under Harris. That's again according to Moody's analysis. Also, according to Moody's, at the end of a Trump tenure, the U.S. would have 3.1 million fewer jobs than under Harris, and a 4.5% unemployment rate, a half percentage point higher than Harris's. Goldman Sachs predicted a less dramatic impact from a Trump term, with the economy growing a half a percentage point slower next year under him than it would under Harris, and inflation about 4/10 of a percentage point higher if he's elected. But here's something both candidates have in common. According to the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, their plans will both add trillions of dollars to our national debt. Median estimates say Trump could add as much as $7.5 trillion to the national debt. As for Harris, the committee said her proposals could add as much as $3.5 trillion. These estimates might seem to support putting Harris at the helm, but many voters do see it differently. For example, results of an AP NORC poll released this month gave Harris an edge on the issue of taxes for the middle class, but found that voters were evenly divided on whether Trump or Harris is better on prices for everyday essentials like groceries and gas. Neither candidate has an edge on jobs and unemployment. And that's where we remain, balanced on a knife's edge, as millions of Americans are already casting ballots for the 2024 election. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline. Odyssey serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.